please. This
Good morning. May it please the court. This court is required by the Administrative Procedures Act to review the administrative record used by the Coast Guard in terminating Captain Menke's appointment. When this case was before the court on the Coast Guard's motion for summary affirmance, the Coast Guard conceded that after acquired information is not relevant for the purposes of determining whether agency action is reasonable. And more to the point, they conceded that informal communications after December 29, 2003, concerning the SLSPA's response to his letter, and this is to Wasserman's letter of October 22, 2003, may not support Wasserman's decision of that date. So the question is, what did Wasserman know on December 29, 2003? And what supports his letter terminating Captain Menke's appointment? The letter itself says that the association was not capable of providing adequate service, but that Captain Menke's appointment as an independent pilot would terminate by its own nature. It expired because, well, there is no because. And that's what this court remanded for a determination of cause for the expiration. The Coast Guard has now abandoned the naturally expired argument and essentially says that Wasserman decided that the association deserved a chance to prove that it could provide adequate service. But what in the record as of December 29th supports that determination? And December 29th is an important date because without that naturally expired letter, Captain Menke's would have continued to serve into the 2004 season, just as he had continued to serve in the 2002 season and into the 2003 season. So something had to happen to change that continuation. The Coast Guard now says essentially that Wasserman made a determination or a belief that the association would be able to do better in the next season. But what supports that? On October 22nd of 2003, exactly 7 years ago today, Wasserman said, "I am concerned that the association does not possess the ability, experience, or desire to operate, maintain, and continually provide basic pilotage service on Lake Ontario in a safe, reliable, and efficient way." He threatened to decertify them. Yet now they say that by December 29th, he believed that they could do an adequate job in the next season. It's true that the Coast Guard Admiral Gilmore affirmed that decision in April of 2004, but he affirmed it on the same basis in which it was issued, that the appointment naturally expired. For some reason, Wasserman did not tell his superior that he had changed his mind and that there was now reason to believe that the association could do a good job. We would contend beyond that, that informal communications can never be part of the administrative record because this court and the district court is fundamentally incapable of evaluating some kind of informal communication which was never disseminated to anybody and is not part of the record before this court. Our second argument involves the First Amendment. Congress determined that associations had to be voluntary. The Coast Guard seems to say that It's voluntary if someone can join or not join, and being in a voluntary association has nothing to do with whether the Coast Guard can exclude non-members from working, from being dispatched by the association. We think the appropriate issue is the one posed by the Supreme Court's decision in General Motors, where the court looked at the authority of a labor organization and said that a labor organization can compel membership in the financial core sense, but not membership in the actual sense. And then when you throw into that the Supreme Court's decision in Teamsters Local 357, that a union which operates a referral hall is obligated to refer non-members as well as members. We believe that the association in this case...
That wasn't a First Amendment decision, though, was it?
It was a way to avoid raising the First Amendment in the National Labor Relations Act.
Right.
The issue in the First Amendment comes up in the Abood case,
right,
the Street case, and the Hansen case, all of which we cited. But they're all based on the principle that you can't compel membership in an association as a condition of employment. And that's what's happening here. The Coast Guard relies on Keller, which says that under certain circumstances, the government can compel membership in an association. But the word voluntary nowhere appears in the California statute compelling membership in the Bar Association. And it's the word voluntary that forces this court to consider what the association can do in the context of saying a non-member can't be dispatched or doesn't have to be dispatched.
Well, they disagree with your and have for a long time, and there is a Chevron type issue here, disagree with your interpretation of the statute and what voluntary association means.
There is a Chevron issue, but their position is that voluntary means you can join the association or not join the association, but that the association can then say that its pool membership in its pool of pilots, which is limited to members, is essential for being dispatched for employment.
Congress has done that.
Excuse me?
Congress has done that.
I don't believe that's what Congress intended.
The pool thing is a creation of the associate.
Yes, but the association is voluntary. And when you put those two together, if you're not a member of the association, you don't get dispatched.
No, I understand what you're arguing, but the notion that we will have a voluntary association comes from Congress.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this association is not voluntary if membership is the only way to work. That is precisely...
I don't know why that follows. I mean, I hear you, and they have construed the language differently. I understand what you're saying, but there are two ways to construe that language, and they have for a very long time said that your way is incorrect.
Well, they have not for a very long time, because prior to our filing this case, there's no issue, no context that this was ever raised before.
Well, no, but I thought, I may be wrong, I thought that this was their consistent view.
They wouldn't... Never forced to reach that issue.
No, I understand that may have
They've never said the opposite.
They've never said the opposite. It may never have been challenged, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been their consistent view. It has been their consistent view.
If you remember one of the things that Mr. High said in one of the documents in evidence in this case, he said that the reason that the regulations require pilots to pay to the association the costs of running the association is applicable only to non-members in the association, because members in the association, as part of their membership obligation, would have to do that anyway. So High, whom the Coast Guard relies upon, said that the regulations are designed to allow non-members to be dispatched. That is not the current position.
Well, the agency has said that is not their position.
It was.
Well, no, they said that person never had the authority.
No, they said Flint's never had the authority. And they say that High...
But in any event, the agency has stated a position as the agency's position. And no matter what anyone has previously said, they've said that this is our interpretation to which we are owed deference, is their
claim.
Yes.
and we believe that their interpretation is wrong.
Well, that I understand, but you were saying it as if it's self-evident. It isn't self-evident when you read the statute, and it comes from the statute, not the regulations. The secretary can authorize the formation of a pool by a voluntary association of United States pilots, and you can read that the way the agency is reading it.
I don't believe the congressional intent was to make mandatory membership the only way a pilot could be dispatched. I don't think they would have put the word voluntary in the statute at all if that's what they were trying to do.
Mr. Axelrod, the government's argued that your First Amendment claim is precluded by the Second Circuit litigation. Why isn't that correct?
First, because in denying the motion for summary affirmance, the court said they wanted to hear the merits of the case, so we briefed the merits of the case. Second,
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that. There's a judgment in the Second Circuit on a claim, on your,
yes,
First Amendment claim, so why aren't you precluded?
Keller says that the government can force membership in an association, and that's what was done in California for the Bar Association. We believe that the word voluntary takes this case out of Keller for the reasons
that I don't see if this is responsive. Maybe I'm not being clear about my question. The Second Circuit issued a judgment.
Second Circuit
rejecting your First Amendment claim.
Against the association.
Correct. But you've raised the claim, and you lost it there, and
yes,
my question is, why isn't it precluded here?
Because the Second Circuit's decision says Keller is the answer. And Keller is not.
So you're saying you're not precluded because they were wrong?
No, I'm saying part of it that is that
that's not relevant. The question is whether they addressed and resolved your issue.
But they didn't even consider the issue of voluntariness in this statute.
Well, you didn't raise it, did you?
Absolutely, we did.
And they still got to the judgment they got to. Right. So you're saying they made an error. You don't like that judgment.
Yes.
Why didn't you appeal it?
To the Supreme Court? I don't believe the Supreme Court would.
Okay, so you're stuck with that judgment. It's final.
Yes.
And under ordinary preclusion principles, I don't know how we can hear the same claim.
I think we explained in our brief why there are exceptions to preclusion. I think preclusion allows us to raise an issue where the other circuit's decision is fundamentally unfair, and we have raised the fundamental unfairness.
Is that the best argument for avoiding preclusion here?
At this stage, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well, I can tell you that that's not convincing to me. You have a second best argument for avoiding preclusion?
They were wrong.
Was the Second Circuit decision issued before or after the Coast Guard articulated its interpretation of the regulation? Do you know?
I can tell you that the Coast Guard's interpretation was not presented to the Second Circuit. I don't remember whether the Second Circuit's decision on the remand had come out at the time. If you have no further questions, I'd reserve what time I have left for rebuttal.
You don't have time, but we'll give you a minute.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Alan Birch for the United States. If I could go directly to the administrative record to address the First Amendment claim, the agency explains on, page 293 and 94, that is not how they viewed voluntary association. The analysis was lengthy and clear that the Coast Guard does not require Menkes or any other pilot to be a member of the association to be dispatched under the discretionary authority of the regulation. The conclusion on page 294 is, finally to be very clear, the Coast Guard has no interest in whether Mr. Menkes joins the association or any other pilot's association. The matter is entirely up to him. It is not the position of the Coast Guard that he must join a pilot's association if he wants to provide piloted service. That's been the position of the Coast Guard all along. It was thoroughly explained on remand. It's been the position throughout this litigation. It was explained in our brief, and that Menkes seems to have misunderstood the argument as making an analogy to a closed shop in a union, which is simply not the case. Thus, his First Amendment claim entirely collapses. There are several other reasons. Issue preclusion is one as well.
Mr. Birch, can I go back to your statement that being a member of the association is not required?
Right.
How then would someone be dispatched?
Well, they would need to be licensed and registered as a pilot, first of all, which Mr. Menke's is, and then they would need to make a request. They have two options. They could either make the request directly to the Coast Guard, or they could go through the association and ask the association to put them on the rolls and treat them in the same way. But that's an option that is up to the association or not. But that's not required.
Wait, you said that you slurred there. That's an option what?
That option is not, that's not the only option. They can go directly to the Coast Guard. It's important to distinguish between the certification, or the registration is what it's called, and the license, and the dispatch. The license and the registration are not at issue. There was never any question of taking that away.
He is licensed and certified, right?
Right. And even the Mr. The Flint's letter at the very beginning, when he talked about vested property interests, was referring to the registration. In the letter. So there's never been any question about the Coast Guard trying to touch that.
Well, but what good does the license and registration do you if you cannot work unless you're a member of the association?
But that's the point, Your Honor. He doesn't have to be a member of the association.
If they want to dispatch him.
The association can dispatch him, or he can come directly to the Coast Guard.
Yeah, but you won't take him unless there's inadequate provision by the association, right?
That's right. That's right. So the
association is effectively able to block him if it won't accept him for membership and if it provides adequate service without him.
If it provides adequate service, yes. That's the nature of the statutory regime that's been set up by Congress. The statute explicitly sets that up.
They can't refuse membership if you're licensed and certified and willing to pay the fee, though, right?
The association can't refuse membership?
They can.
I don't think so. I don't know. I just want to know if that's your question.
Yes, that's my question. If someone like him came and said, you know, I'm licensed and I want to be dispatched here, I'll pay your fee.
I assume that's the right answer. If I could just have a moment.
I think not. That was the decision. I mean, the Coast Guard's interpretation is that the case should be not.
I don't know the answer, Your Honor.
I thought it was in the decision on the remand that the association doesn't want to take him. It doesn't have to.
That may very well be.
Two parties: the applicant and the association.
That may very well be the correct, Your Honor. But the statutory scheme provides that that's the decision. I mean, that's not something that the Coast Guard can get at in the existing statutory structure.
Well, it's something that the Coast Guard accepts and nonetheless goes forward with its interpretation, right? On the premise, on the understanding that the association needn't accept him if it doesn't want to.
Right.
That voluntary means that they have to be two people in agreement.
That's right. That's right, Your Honor.
So they don't have to take him, and if they don't take him, you don't take him unless there's a otherwise inadequate number of pilots.
Right. And at that point, at that point, perhaps there is an analogy to membership in a bar association or something like that. There is no per se First Amendment problem in that.
Is the Coast Guard's view that this statute should include allowing the certificated pilots associations to decide if they will dispatch non-member pilots?
Right.
And then you go on to reserve the right, if the service is inadequate, to dispatch your own independent.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay. Yeah, but where do they say that they will reject someone who is certified and licensed and wants to be a part of the association?
That the association can. That's your question.
Yeah.
where they say it's up to the association to decide. Oh, if they will dispatch a non-member.
If they will dispatch a non-member.
Right.
I didn't remember that being answered.
Part of the issue is... Become a member if you want.
It's not directly raised here because he doesn't want to be a member, so we don't have the rejection in that. There is possibly an aboot question. If you have a situation where someone is certified and licensed, and the only way you can get work unless the association is not up to it is if you are part of the association, and the association controls whether they let you in or out.
I thought the aboot issue was whether there were ancillary activities that the association would be spending your money on.
Type issue.
But that's not
forcing. I think it's different because the unions stand for more than just representation, and that's where it gets tricky. But the question is, can you condition employment on membership? That's the underlying question.
But then it becomes similar to the bar associations and medical associations.
The bar associations decide whether to accept me if I pass the bar? They say we're not going to let you in, assuming I haven't done anything wrong.
Well, then, I mean, there's judgment.
Oh, no, that's different. I'm not talking about a legitimate reason for it, but just...
just for no reason at all.
We have enough.
We don't want you.
Well, if there were a statutory scheme in place that said, where Congress said, if there are a sufficient number of doctors, then the AMA can...
Where does it say if there's a sufficient number of pilots?
No, that's the point. I mean, the scheme here is different because there's the scheme that Congress has set up.
Section 9304 says the Coast Guard may provide pilotage through these voluntary associations.
Right.
That's permissive. So I would read that as saying you are not required to do it through voluntary associations.
Certainly, but you are authorized to, yes. The Coast Guard is authorized. Right.
So if you have somebody who is registered and certified and capable as a pilot, but you say they can't be dispatched unless the association wants them to, haven't you read the permissive language out of the statute?
No, Your Honor, because you're defeating the purpose of having the association to begin with. I mean, the pool is to provide the efficiency of not having the Coast Guard doing the operation itself. And the reason that it does, for the statute as I understand it, is to permit the Coast Guard to rely on these associations to do the scheduling, the dispatching, the collecting of the fees, the disbursement, the shuttling of the pilots back and forth between the shore and vessels.
I can understand all of that, and facially, my instinct was that didn't bother me a whole lot.
Right.
For the efficiency reasons. The question I was curious the answer on was, can an association say to a licensed, no discipline problems person, we're not going to allow you in the association? Now, that hasn't been raised here because this
That's
person
right.
doesn't want to be written.
That's
There's
right.
There's no ideological issues right. that have been raised. I understand that. And the fee notion, having to pay a fee to be part of an arrangement, we're past, and where there's no ideological. But I was just curious in thinking mm-hmm. about this case as to what the Coast Guard had said on that, if anything, and you're saying you don't know.
No, I believe that Judge Ginsburg was reading is correct, that it's voluntary, that the association may exclude somebody because it's a voluntary association. But I don't think that raises any issues that would change the outcome in this case.
What Judge Ginsburg found was that that's not addressed. It's not there. They said it can exclude someone who chooses not to be.
Well, now it turns out they also can exclude someone who wants to be and is certified.
It says that too?
Yeah, 287 to 88. While the regulation specifically grants the Pilots Association authority to deny the facilities and services of the pool to pilots refusing to agree to important terms for participation in the pool, it does not explicitly address whether a Pilots Association must otherwise make the facilities and services of the pool available to non-member pilots. The Coast Guard does not interpret this provision as requiring the provision of the facilities and services of the pool to every pilot willing to make the required authorizations or to require the Pilots Association to dispatch every such pilot. And that's repeated elsewhere in the opinion.
Right. I mean, the provision of the services is expensive, and that's what...
290, it says the Pilots Association, persons wanting to join a Pilots Association apply to become a member, and the association admits those it chooses to accept.
Right.
And who can meet the requirement.
If it does not accept them, then the point being that the association should be within its rights to charge them for the services that are provided. In any event, this is all covered by the issue.
That's if they accept them.
That's if, yeah. The point is that it can decide simply, we have enough, we don't need any more.
Right.
Right.
In any event, the entire
case that we're raising is not here, and it hasn't. Right. This case hasn't been challenged on these terms. But the question we're raising is: if someone comes in, no problems whatsoever, certified, licensed, a lot of experiences, yeah, I'll pay the fee. No ideological problems. They just will pay my fee, put me in your pool, and the association says no. Now that hasn't been raised here.
Right. So I'm a little...
Well, because we're trying to get the full understanding of what's before us. That's why we're raising it.
Well, because of the issue preclusion, I don't think you need to get to this at all. The issue was certainly presented to the Second Circuit. And
did the Second Circuit go through the restatement factors on...
It had a much shorter analysis, but that doesn't determine whether issue preclusion...
It's not a published opinion. Is it binding?
It doesn't need to be binding for precedential value to have issue preclusion value.
If you don't do the analysis?
It's a matter of whether the issue was presented and litigated.
Well, if you don't
litigated.
Do the analysis, how do we know?
Well, you could look
at... The Second Circuit didn't do any analysis.
You could certainly look at the briefs, for example, if you wanted. If you were, the best, perhaps the best brief to look at would be the rehearing petition that lays out their claim, which is essentially identical to the way they presented it here. If there are no further questions, I would ask the court to affirm.
Well, sure. I know. I would like to hear your answer on his arbitrary and capricious. They didn't. They seem not. His argument is they seem not. The right hand didn't seem to know what the left hand was doing. And the final decision is one that we rebuffed the first time around. I'm repeating what I thought I heard his argument to be. And what is your answer?
Well, generally speaking, the administrative record is very thorough, and it has a tremendous amount of information, and it describes where the information comes from. It's certainly not improper to have informal communications in the record. That's indeed part of the reason for the remand, was to have the informal communications described. They were done so at some detail. The global attack he makes in his reply brief about it being impossible to check the facts is not tied to any particular fact that seems to be in dispute. For example, there's no dispute about the number of pilots that were actually used or the number of pilots that were reasonably expected to be needed. And so there's no dispute about the conditions of the incapacity of the association. And without there being any sort of facts to get a handle on to, as being challenged, there's no basis for the court to second-guess the agency's findings.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Birch.
Thank you.
As I think Judge Ginsburg pointed out, the Coast Guard's decision on remand defines a voluntary association as one which has the right to reject applicants for membership, which means also that they are rejected from employment. The record does contain the document that Captain Menke signed for the 2004 season, agreeing to pay all the association fees if the association dispatched him during the 2004 season, and he was not so dispatched. So the issue is there, the fact is there, it's not been rebutted. We've just been told that there's no dispute concerning the facts concerning the 2004 season. The facts concerning the 2004 season are only evident from Mr. Wasserman's affidavit or declaration. There is no background information to challenge that, but what we have challenged is the Coast Guard's right to rely upon after acquired evidence, and there is no indication from Mr. Wasserman or anywhere else that any of that information was available to the Coast Guard on December 29th, 2003. And
is it not clear that that information was available before April of 2004?
I don't know whether it was available as of that date.
Do we know that it ever became available?
By the time of the Wasserman affidavit, which was in 2008, it was certainly available, and probably it was available at some time in 2004. But the point I made earlier is that when Gilmore affirmed Wasserman's decision, he affirmed it on the naturally expire concept.
Did he say he was deferring to Wasserman?
He affirmed his decision.
Did he say, I'm deferring to Wasserman's decision, or did he say, I believe that it naturally expired?
Both. He said Wasserman has properly found that there was no current ability to serve, and Wasserman found that it naturally expired, and I affirmed that. If there was any indication that he knew or that the facts existed as to the 2004 season at that time, you would think he would have said something. Remember that this is the same Coast Guard that says we have to ignore what Flint said originally because High said something different. If Gilmore was going to say something different, that was the time to do it.
Gilmore's the admiral?
Excuse me?
Gilmore's the admiral?
Gilmore was the admiral who affirmed Wasserman's decision.
Let me just make sure. You made an assertion about what he was offering to pay. He didn't offer to pay the equity stake in the association.
No, he offered to pay the ongoing operations expenses, which is all that's required by the Coast Guard's regulation, that he pay the cost of the pilotage boats, which get him from onto the ships that he was going to pilot, that he paid for the dispatch services. That's what's required by the statute. And there's, in fact,
statute, does it limit it that way? What do you?
There's a letter from a Mr.
Well, where in the statute? You said it.
I'm sorry. The regulations
say that.
The regulations say that a pilot is required to pay the operational expenses of the association, and Mr. Captain Menkes did sign a document authorizing the association to take those expenses out of any pay that he was to receive. The system requires the shipping companies to pay the association. The association takes its cut and passes on as the wages to the pilots, and he authorized them to make those deductions for the 2004 season. There is a letter from an Admiral Bennett in page 103 of the record saying that membership is not required in the association, but Menkes must pay the association for its reasonable operating costs. And that's what he did. And that's what he did for the 2004 season, as well as the 2001, 2002, 2003 seasons. He was making himself available to the association. They said, you're not a member, you don't work. And that's what we see as the violation here.
In 2002?
In 2002, he was still an independent pilot certified by the Coast Guard because the association was not capable of providing services. And at all of those times, he was paying his share of the expenses. When the independent pilot status was terminated, he went to the association and continued to submit the authorization form, and they continued to refuse to dispatch him. Thank you,
Mr. Axelrod. Mr. Redberg, thank you. Case is submitted.